and burst into tears. Her body was racked with sobbing, as if the sorrow held back for the weary days of the journey had now, at last, been set free. Stasia put her arms around her friend. Irina wept against her shoulder. At a slight distance, she could see the tall form of Mattis standing under a tree, unmoving. She had never considered that the ruler's men must have homes, families, lives beyond the cruel work they did. Now the thought came to her that Mattis might have a wife, daughters, sisters. "It's all right. It's all right. Cry all you want," she murmured, knowing it wasn't all right. Not for Irina. Not for herself. Not for the folk of Hartwood or for the forest. Who could mend the wrongs that had led to this? Who could change the greed and cruelty, the disregard for what was right and good? And yet, in the middle of it all, there was one man who practiced kindness. "You're a true friend, Stasia," Irina said between sobs. She scrubbed her cheeks and pushed her hair back from her face in an effort at control. "Henrik, my husband, had this made especially for me." She touched the ring, took a steadying breath. Do you think they are together now? Somewhere. My son and his father. A comfort to each other in the next world. If I could believe that, if I could, it might not feel so wrong to go on." Flip chose that moment to emerge from the bushes, licking her lips. Clearly, her mission had been accomplished. "I do believe it," Stasia said. "None of us can know what form that world takes. But I believe they are watching over you, Irina. Guardian spirits, who might be anything. A bird in flight, a ripple on the water, new leaves opening on a tree, a smile of welcome. They are always with you, if you know how to look." She had often felt this about grandmother, whose wisdom had still seemed close, even after she was laid in her grave. "We'd best go back, if you're ready." As they walked back, she wondered if Alexis had a family. She could not imagine it, though he must have had parents, as she had. Perhaps, like her, he had no memory of them. Were they watching over him now, as Irina's lost ones surely were over her? And if so, what would they think of their son? He was the ruler's personal advisor, young as he was. That might be seen as some kind of achievement, at least in the world of courts and armies. But in the end, hadn't he been in charge of the whole sorry situation at Hartwood? That would make the shades of his family turn away from him. Surely, such a man would always walk alone. She had imagined that the whole convoy would camp at the farm Mattis had mentioned, but it wasn't like that. They stopped in early afternoon by a stream, and the men dismounted, tethered their horses, and began to set up camp. The man who was driving their cart got down, and so did Stasia, ready to help her friends. But Alexis was suddenly beside her. "I'll take you to the farmhouse," he said in a voice held deliberately low. "The three of you. It's not far. Get back up." Too surprised to respond, she did as she was told. Alexis climbed onto the carter's seat, flicked the reins, and drove the two horses quickly back to the road. For someone whose work involved a lot of talking and giving orders, he seemed surprisingly expert. True. It wasn't far, not as the crow flew. But the way was neither straight nor simple. Alexis drove the cart around many turns onto more than one branching way, and Stasia began to wonder if it was all some kind of trick, and he was taking them not to a comfortable farmhouse, but to some other, darker place. Flip seemed unperturbed, though she sent Stasia some mind pictures that worried her. It was clear she wanted to be a bird, to fly ahead through this wooded area and investigate. Stasia responded with a picture of her own, Flip the dog securely in the cart, exercising patience. The last thing she needed right now was for Alexis to see Flip change. The farm gates were closed. Stasia got out and went to open them without being asked, and Alexis drove the horses through. She was still fastening the loop of rope that held the gate secure, when a large dog came hurtling down the track toward her, barking an ear-splitting challenge. Flip jumped onto the seat beside Alexis, hackles up. Alexis was saying something, but the farm dog's voice drowned out his words. Stasia turned to face the hound. She opened her mind to its thoughts, which were full of the duty to guard, to protect. It was doing its job, and doing it well. She raised her hands, palm forward, a slow gesture of peace. Sent an image of herself and the big dog together, sitting on a mat before a hearth fire, her hands stroking its shaggy pelt. Pictured it laying its head on her knee, licking her fingers, sighing and falling asleep. "I will not hurt you. You are a good dog." She did not look the creature straight in the eye. Neither did she turn away. The dog quieted, but held its ground. Alexis got down from his seat. Flip jumped down too, running up to the farm dog without hesitation, though it was many times her size. "Good boy, Rusty," Alexis said. "Remember me?" It seemed Rusty did. Perhaps it was the combination of Stasia's mind pictures and Flip's confident trust, and the dawning recognition that there was someone here whom the dog had met before. But Rusty stood calm and quiet while Alexis walked forward and offered his hand to be sniffed. Flip, meanwhile, had been distracted by some interesting smell in the long grass nearby. And now, coming down the track from the farmhouse, was a sturdily built woman clad in a homespun gown with a bright red apron over the top. Her greying hair was pulled back in a scarf both practical and decorative. Its vivid stripes of red, yellow and blue suggested an exotic bird. "Alex!" she exclaimed, beaming. "This is a surprise." Her gaze moved from Alexis to Stasia, to the waiting horses, and the cart with its two occupants. "You'd better come on up. Is the gate secure?" Stasia nodded. Alex. These must be folk who knew him well. Family, perhaps? That seemed unlikely. Did a son of farmers get to become the ruler's senior advisor? Maybe. Here, she would find answers. Maybe what she discovered would help her when she had to face the ruler in person. That prospect terrified her. How would she know what to say or how to say it? What if she said the things she really felt, the way she had when the commander confronted her in the village hall? What if her words dried up altogether? The woman was called Lima. Stasia liked that. It was the name of a forest spirit in an old story. Her husband was evil. Alexis gave them the briefest of explanations. They were heading for Dragon's Keep. They all needed rest and an opportunity to wash themselves and get some clothing clean and dry. And both Lima and evil accepted it without further questions, other than to ask for the names of their unexpected visitors. Lima took Stasia and Arina into a kitchen area and sat them down beside a big, warm stove, then bustled off and was heard giving someone directions about hot water, cloths, salves. Evo and Alexis guided Lucas away to some other part of the farmhouse. Stasia had to trust that he was in good hands. It was, at least, better than the constant jolting of the cart. She felt as if she had bruises on bruises. How much worse must it be for Lucas, injured before they even began this journey? It was so wonderful to be warm. It felt blissful to be out of the cart and off the road. But Stasia knew she must not drop her guard. Tempting as it was, she could not waste time simply enjoying the comfort of this place. A bath, yes, that was entirely necessary. And after two younger women, perhaps Lima's daughters, carried in a tub and filled it with deliciously warm water, she did allow herself to stay in a little longer than was strictly required to get clean. Irina had her turn. Lima returned with garments which, if not a perfect fit, were perfectly adequate for both women to wear, and she provided Stasia with further materials to deal with the bleeding and a bag to keep them in. They brushed and braided each other's hair. One of the young women brought hot tea and pastries on a tray. Then the two of them left. Perhaps they were farm workers, not daughters. Stasia did not ask. "And you'll want these things washed and dried, hmm?" Lima asked as they ate and drank. The dirty clothes lay in a heap in the corner. Stasia could hear no sound from elsewhere in the house. Where had they taken Lucas? "I'll do that," she said, "as soon as I've finished my tea. You just need to show me where. The sooner I get them hung up, the sooner they'll be dry. There's a good breeze today." Lima gave her an assessing look, then nodded. "If you're happy to do the job, I'll show you where everything is. But you must be tired. Rest first, if you like. There's a room where you can both lie down for a while." She glanced at Flip, who was cleaning up stray crumbs of pastry from the tiled floor. "And your little friend, of course. Irina might like a rest." "No, I'll help you with the laundry. You don't need to do everything. But I wouldn't say no to a sleep after that, unless there's some other way I can be helpful. It would be bliss to lie down somewhere comfortable." In the end, all three women dealt with the dirty clothes, soaking, scrubbing, rinsing, wringing and hanging the garments from a line strung between two trees, where they would catch both the breeze and the spring sunshine. Then Irina retreated to rest, and Stasia, looking out over green fields dotted with grazing sheep, and copses of birch and elder, and a narrow winding pathway that ran beside the stream, knew there was one thing she really needed to do. "I'd like to take Flip for a walk, if that's all right. I won't disturb the stock. I grew up in a farming settlement." Why was it that with some people, like Lima, who was a virtual stranger, it was quite easy to talk, and with others, almost impossible? "Go ahead, Stasia. Keep to the pathways and make sure your dog doesn't go near the bull. He's rather edgy at present." "Lima, you saw Lucas, who came in with us. He badly needs his injuries tended to, burns and other things. I've been doing my best, but it's not enough. Where did they..." Lima put a reassuring hand on Stasia's shoulder. "Ivo's good at these things. You can trust him. He can mend animals when they're hurt, and he can do the same for his own kind. No magical cures, sadly. Just good common sense and years of practice." "Thank you." She wanted to ask how they knew Alexis, what the link was, but that would be one question too many. "I'll be back in time to help with anything else that needs doing." A treacherous part of her wished they could stay here for longer than one night. The place felt like a safe harbour, a refuge from the storm. But she had to go on. Even supposing she could escape from the convoy, there could be no returning to Hartwood, not while the commander's forces were there. And these people, good souls as they seemed to be, were not offering her a home, a place in their household, work for her hands, even though she could be genuinely useful on a farm such as this. She didn't belong among folk. She never had. She'd always be the odd one out. "Keep moving," she muttered to herself as Flip ran ahead along the pathway. "Keep on going. Even if you're scared and mixed up and nothing makes much sense." A walk. The simplest of things, and yet it could lift the heart so. This was no great forest. There were no rocky outcrops to climb, no streams to leap over or wade through, no trees the equal of the ancestor. But it was beautiful. So many small and wondrous things, sun on the pale trunks of the birches, the rustle of the breeze in their silvery leaves, a warble of birdsong from above, a greeting that had her smiling and waving a hand toward the singer. Flip was here, there, everywhere, intoxicated by a multitude of new scents. That was no surprise after the long days in the confinement of the cart. She tried to convey to the little dog that it was still best she not change her form. Alexis must not know. Nobody must know. But perhaps now, just for a little. The response was quick, Flipped dived into some bushes, and a very small bird, a tawny, feathered brambling, flew out almost immediately. Stasia showed Flip an image of herself calling and the bird flying straight to her. A dog again, the moment she landed at Stasia's feet. "Make sure you don't forget," Stasia murmured. The bull was by the gate of his field, separated from his cows, and looking far from pleased with the situation. The brambling flew to him without hesitation, alighting on his back. Stasia sucked in a breath, wondering if Flip had interpreted the warning as applying to her dog form only. As it was, the bull did not seem especially disturbed by her presence, only twitching his ears a little, and that made Stasia bolder. She was under the trees, at some distance from the creature, and had intended to back away and seek another path. Instead, she opened her mind, not only to the bird that was Flip, but also to the powerful animal she had chosen as a temporary perch. "You are such a handsome boy. Strong and fine. Soon, they will let you go to your wives. Wait only a little." The bull raised his head and let out a bellow. Not anger, not distress, pure pride and longing. A deep and powerful physical longing that was uncomfortable to share. Stasia closed her eyes, making herself breathe slowly, then gave the bull a nod of recognition and went on her way. A moment later, the brambling alighted on her shoulder, its weight so slight she hardly felt it. They moved through the birch grove, and there, under a patch of open sky, was a perfectly round pool bordered by pale stones. The brambling flew down to the water's edge. By the time she landed, she had become a small owl. "You and I have the same idea," murmured Stasia. For a ritual did not need fire. It could be performed in many different places, and this pool was surely a place of wonder. There was time. Alexis was occupied at the farm, and Irina was resting. Lima knew where she was. Lucas was not yet capable of such a walk. Time to risk it, even if there were no insights to be had. Even if what she saw was as alarming as that vision of fire and death, a horror that had later become truth. First, she must gather some items to assist her. She must find tokens for the four elements and somehow show what wisdom she was seeking. No amber owl this time. That most powerful and beloved of symbols might never return to her. But there was the real owl, big-eyed, feathered in patterns of fawn and brown, her small form neat and complete. As Stasia regarded her, Flip plucked out a single breast feather and held it in her beak, fixing her eyes on her companion. "Thank you," Stasia said with a grave nod. One element they had in abundance. And among the stones by the pond, there was one with a shallow indentation at the top. She scooped up water in cupped hands and poured it into the hollow, making a tiny version of the pond. "Thank you. Air. Water. Now earth." She took off her shoes and stockings and moved barefoot back towards the trees, stepping with care lest she crush some beetle or hopper or many-legged wriggling creature. She took a small handful of soil, a fallen leaf, and a birch catkin, whose seeds might perhaps be planted later. "Thank you." She would not make fire. How else to honour its blessing? Without the recognition of all four elements, the ritual would be incomplete, and there might be no insights. Stasia arranged her items the way grandmother had shown her. Water in the west, earth in the north, air in the east, where Flip stood by her feather gift as grave and still as an owl of stone or wood. Stasia paced a small circle around the offerings, and for each she spoke words of greeting and welcome, acknowledging the element's blessings. As she came to the south, whose quarter bore no symbol, the clouds parted, and a ray of sunshine struck down between the birches, casting a warm blessing on the ritual and its participants. Acceptance. Acknowledgement. Stasia bowed her head, Thank you. Then a time of slow breathing, of opening the mind to visions. And when she was ready, the request. I am troubled by this journey. I fear what lies ahead for me and my friends, and for my beloved forest of Heartwood, and for all forests, for all the years ahead. I am only one person. How can I be strong enough? How can I stand up for what I know to be right? She waited, listening to the music of grove and pond, birds chirping, the gurgling call of a frog, the whisper of leaves. The air was sweet with the scent of flowering chamomile, and the sunshine hinted at the summer to come. Where would she be then? Focus, Stasia. Make your mind still. A ripple on the pond's shining surface. Then, shockingly, the image as before. The fire, the screams, the smoke. She forced herself to hold still, to keep her eyes open. It was blessedly shorter than last time. Images of Heartwood in the aftermath. Nothing of herself or Rina or Lucas. Nothing of Mattis or Alexis or Pavel or any of the men who had left Heartwood with them. Briefly, there was Jorgus, looking old and weak, being tended to by his wife and daughter. At home, that was something. The commander, up by the forest, shouting. A crew of men hacking at trees, men who looked hollowed out, as if haunted by demons. A team of exhausted horses, harnessed to a huge log, dragging it down the hill. Stasia felt their weariness in every part of her body. This was beyond tears. It was beyond belief, and yet she knew it for truth. A shadow seemed to come over the image, as if dark clouds had filled the sky above Heartwood, though here by the pond the spring sun still painted the birches in white and silver. Then, in the water, Stasia saw the woman from her earlier vision, a crone whose face was clearer now. Not her grandmother. A stranger, with calm features and clear grey eyes and long hair the colour of thistledown. She held out her hands in welcome, then beckoned to Stasia. Come, come. Behind her was a steep rock face and what looked like a cave entry. And another figure, a tall person in a hooded cape, standing so still they might have been part of the rocks. The figure turned, but before she could see their face, the vision faded and was gone. She sat a while, breathing slowly. There must be some meaning in this, some answer. Maybe it was only keep on going. Maybe whatever was to be done, she must do alone, since the vision had contained nothing of her friends or of the men who had taken her away from Heartwood. Perhaps her journey did not end with Dragon's Keep or the ruler, Lady Elisabetta. Wherever that place of the cave was, she knew in her bones that it was far from any human settlement. Flip was a dog again, pushing her head into Stasia's side, prodding her to get up and go. She was right. Stay too long away and Alexis might come looking for her, thinking she was trying to escape his custody. She walked back slowly, taking time to remember some of the stories about Heartwood, and in particular, the huge rock formation of the Hermit. Somewhere in that lore were the secrets that fueled the commander's quest to make a path there, even if it meant the ruination of the great forest. Among the tales of fey folk and evil spirits, of treasure and adventure, love and loss, lay the key to a mystery. Perhaps the Amber Owl, her own lost treasure, was itself a key. Not long now before they reached Dragon's Keep, and people started asking her questions again. Questions she did not want to answer. 13. Alexis. There were protocols to be observed when meeting with the ruler. even for her senior adviser. He waited for Elisabetta's serving woman, Paula, to tap on the door to the council chamber, then, after a carefully judged pause, open it a crack. "Master Alexis to see you, my lady." "Enter, Master Alexis," the ruler sounded, if anything, rather weary. Alexis came in, closing the door behind him. He'd bathed and changed into appropriate clothing for court, formal garments in cream and dark blue in place of his travel-stained riding clothes, soft leather shoes instead of riding boots. "My lady." He gave the formal bow appropriate to such occasions. Lady Elisabetta was not seated in her comfortable chair by the fire. Instead, she was at the head of the long table that could, if required, accommodate 20 or more. She offered a stiff nod of recognition. "Master Alexis, time for a talk, I think. It's been some while since your most recent message from Hartwood reached me. I replied promptly, requesting that you return as soon as possible with this young woman you mentioned. I had expected you at court much earlier." "It is a long way, my lady, and as we had injured men with us, we had to bring carts. That mode of travel is notoriously slow." "Injured men, yes. I observed them coming in. And not only the girl, but another woman. And a goat herd? I'm told you've requested the services of the court physician. Not only for our own wounded, but also for this person." Her brows went up. "The circumstances were such that I could not send a full report from Hartwood, my lady. You'll have gathered that Commander Rehard's mission went badly awry." Alexis refrained from reminding her that his own advice some while ago had been never to put Rehard in charge of a mission again. "Such a report could only be delivered by myself in person. In a nutshell, my lady, a great deal of damage has been done to the village of Hartwood, its inhabitants, and the forested area close by. As for the mission itself, I'd have thought anyone could see the terrain makes it impossible for a path such as Rehard described to be created. Many men would be lost in the attempt, for no gain at all." Lady Elisabetta's expression gave nothing away. "Sit down, Master Alexis," she said with cool clarity. "Some mead?" On a smaller table, close to that cushioned chair, there stood a flask and two cups. "Thank you, no." He seated himself on a bench, facing her. "If you want further details, my lady, I can provide them. You mentioned an interest in Stasia some time ago, after I first reported back from Hartwood with certain observations. After I sent that message, the situation deteriorated quickly. Rehard continued to work the local folk too hard. His response to any sign of insubordination was to mete out severe punishment. Stasia's ability intrigued him. Her habit of speaking out angered him. I believed her to be at risk and decided to bring her here. But it would have been inappropriate for a young woman to travel so far in company with a convoy of men. She needed another woman for support. Irina was the village baker. Stasia worked for her." An icy pause. "And the goat herd?" "A friend of Stasia's. A fire in the village claimed the lives of many. The goat herd was badly injured and needs expert medical attention. Stasia would not have come without him." "Ah." There was a note of interest in the ruler's voice at last. "More than a friend, perhaps?" "That I can't tell you. A close friend, at least." "That might provide a useful bargaining tool, should the girl be disinclined to share her secrets," the ruler said, rising and moving over to the hearth. With her back to Alexis, she added, "I wish to speak to this young woman as soon as possible, Alexis. I know you've had a long ride. In recognition of that, we'll wait until tomorrow." "Tomorrow?" Alexis bit back the words that sprang to his lips. It had perhaps been a mistake to sit as he had, his back perfectly straight, his hands relaxed, as if he had not just spent most of the day on horseback. A royal advisor learns how to create the right impression. In this case, competence. Restraint. "I believe she does have useful information for us," he said. "My advice is that you allow her significant time to rest and recover before she's asked to speak." Elisabetta turned a certain look on him. At such moments, one became acutely aware that she was a person of great power. Significant time. What does that mean, precisely? A few days, at least. The opportunity to be out of doors, as that seems to lift Stasia's spirits. If you want her to answer questions, it's worth remembering that. "This is making no sense to me, Master Alexis. I have never known you to waste my time before. You are a person of authority. She is some village girl. Now, it seems entirely dependent on our goodwill. You have questions. She has answers. Why should she not speak up?" There was plenty he could say, but he had something more effective in hand. "It's worth going about this with care, my lady. Let me show you something." He rose and went to stand by her, unfastening the soft kidskin pouch on his belt. He loosened the drawstring and fished out its contents, placing the amber owl carefully on the small table where the firelight caught its glow. "I think you understood the reference in my message, though I did not specifically mention amber. Rihard took this from Stasia by force. She believes it is still in his custody." Lady Elisabetta took the owl up, turning it one way then the other. "This is exceptionally fine. How could a farm girl come by such a treasure? Surely she has stolen this." "From what I have observed, stealing is not in her nature, my lady. She chose not to answer a straight question as to its origin, but instead told a story. Stasia seems more comfortable talking that way. In her story, a young man and a young woman found amber washed up by a forest stream. The young man carved this token as a gift for the young woman. She did not specify where that was, but it was well known in the village that she and the goatherd, Lucas, frequently went walking in Hartwood Forest, venturing further than other folk dared. It's said there are many such tales about the place, some of them very old." Elisabetta simply looked at him. "As I said earlier," he went on, "we'd be well advised to proceed with care, my lady. Much hangs on Stasia's response to your questions. We're not long arrived here. Wait a few days, and you will get better answers." The ruler heaved a sigh as she set the amber owl down again. "You know what's at stake here, Alexis. I must have plans in place before the next Grand Council. That may seem far away, but the days pass quickly, and I must strengthen my position. Lord Casimir was well regarded by the leaders of our neighbouring states. I don't need to tell you that. I, on the other hand, am seen by some as a raw newcomer, almost an interloper. And there are certain parties who will not hesitate to take advantage if I show any sign of weakness. A large deposit of such a valuable trading commodity would help set us up as a credible ally. You know, and I know, that the amber in this trinket is of extremely high value. If we find the source, we might form alliances with more distant trading partners, shore up our borders. This girl is here at court. She and her friend are well accommodated in the servants' quarters, warm, fed, comfortable. It's evident that she knows pathways through the forest and how to use them. And something more, I heard that she has an unusual gift with animals. It's not hard to see how useful that might be on such a journey. She may be able to guide a party all the way to the hermit. It's in her best interest to tell us the full truth without delay. With respect, my lady, if you want the full truth, you should wait longer, 3 days at least. I think it highly likely that too much pressure will send Stasia into complete silence. 2 days. I won't argue the point any further. Arrange what you want for these folk in the meantime, but they're to be watched by a guard day and night, all 3 of them. And they don't leave the servants' quarters. You may go, Master Alexis. Speak to the girl. Make sure she understands what is required. Alexis rose to his feet. Yes, my lady. And he glanced at the amber owl. By your leave, I'll put that safely in storage. Make sure it's locked up securely. We'll need it. My lady. He executed the required bow, returned the owl to its pouch, and walked out, closing the door behind him. 14. Stasia. Dragon's Keep was full of activity, full of noise, full of rules she didn't understand or couldn't see the point of. There always seemed to be a guard around, watching her, but she saw none of the familiar faces. No Mattis, no Pavel, not one of those who had accompanied them on the journey. Alexis had been there earlier, talking to a woman called Beruta, who was in charge of the serving people. So many of them. What did they all do? Flip was scared at first, shivering, wanting to be carried, which was understandable considering the crowd of folk. She might easily have been trampled. They took Lucas away. When she tried to protest, nobody would listen. Later, Beruta explained that men and women had separate areas within the servants' quarters and mingled only at mealtimes or if their duty required it. There were some married couples among them. Those folk slept elsewhere, in their own quarters. When Stasia asked about Lucas, whether he would get proper treatment for his burns, whether he would have somewhere quiet to sleep, Beruta inquired whether she was related to Lucas, his sister, his betrothed. And when Stasia said no, the housekeeper responded with, "Then it's none of your business." The place was a maze of hallways and storage areas and chambers used for various purposes, most of which were a mystery to her. The stone walls were pierced, here and there, by narrow windows which let in both sunlight and cold draughts. These provided Stasia with glimpses of the world outside. On the second day, standing close to one of these windows, she smelled rain. She was tempted to let Flip fly out in bird form, if only to bring back the reassurance that trees and grasses and wild things were still within reach beyond the fortress walls. But she could not risk that, even though Flip herself was restless, eager to be outdoors. How long would they be shut up in this place? How long could they survive it? Dragon's Keep had extensive busy kitchens. Even in the servants' quarters, the meals were substantial. Stasia fed Flip from her own platter and nobody objected. There was an outdoor privy with a small paved area beside it, set too low to allow any view over the wall. Beruta had made it clear that Stasia must take Flip out there several times a day to relieve herself. Even that small respite from the confines of the house was welcome. It was hardly a place to linger, but at least a person could see the sky. Irina was too quiet. At Lima and Evo's farm, she had seemed to be emerging from the first shock of her terrible loss. Here, with endless time to think and remember, she was again shut in, not wanting to move, not wanting to talk, barely able to listen even to words of kindness. It did not help either her or Stasia that the female servants slept in one long, gloomy chamber on pallets set so close a person could stretch out and touch the hand of their neighbour should they ever wish to do so. The space to store personal items was minimal. It was just as well, Stasia thought grimly, that they'd come with so little. At night, Irina pulled her blanket over her head and lay as if dead. But Stasia knew she did not sleep. Whenever she herself woke, which was often, she heard Irina's soft sobbing in the dark. For 2 days and 2 nights, they were left more or less alone, save for the near constant presence of folk about their own business and the ever-watchful woman on guard. Whether she was present solely to stop the two of them from attempting an escape, or whether her role was to raise the alarm if there was some threat to the household, Stasia did not know and did not ask, having learned quickly that folk here viewed her as if she were some unusual specimen suddenly thrust into their midst, or a wild creature that might bite if spoken to the wrong way. It made her wonder what Alexis had said to Beruta or to the ruler. Much of the time the other women went about their day's work as if Stasia were invisible. That should have made her happy. Hadn't she always preferred her own company? Instead, she felt trapped, uneasy. There was a constant churning in her belly. If only she knew what would come next. If only someone would tell her how Lucas was and where he was. If only they would realize that seeing her from time to time might help him. She couldn't heal his injuries, that was for more skilled folk to do, but her stories could take his mind off the pain, ease the sadness of being away from home and family, help him to stay strong. He had not deserved any of this. On the third day, Alexis came to find her. She was in the paved area outside the privy, gazing up at the sky while Flip nosed around, investigating this and that. Stasia heard a small sound and turned to see him in the doorway, tidy in his court clothes with his hair pulled back from his face and tied with a cord. "Stasia, when I asked them to allow you some time outdoors, this was not what I had in mind." What question to ask first? They were bubbling to the surface, all of them together. Lucas, Irina, the ruler, the future. No, she must make herself wait. She must be calm. She drew a deep breath. "We'll go indoors, shall we?" he suggested. "Or find a more pleasant spot to talk?" Stasia felt her mouth curl, more grimace than smile. "This is the only outdoor place where I'm allowed to go. Come." He reached out a hand. "There's a garden not so far off. As my guest, you may certainly go there in my company." A garden? Was this some kind of trick? Stasia did not move, but Flip ran to Alexis and put her paws up on his leg, seeking attention. He did not spare the dog so much as a glance. The hawk, Stasia thought, fixed on his purpose as always. "I must take you to see the ruler soon," he said. "It's best that you and I have a talk first, and this is not the place for that. Come, please." She did not take his hand, but followed him as he led the way back indoors. The guard who had been just inside watching her was now nowhere to be seen. Alexis took her along a series of passageways, out of the servants' quarters and into spring sunshine. She drew in a long breath, hardly believing what she saw. Flip hurtled away across a green lawn, around which grew well-tended fruit trees, peach, plum, others of a kind she had not seen before. There were wooden benches here and there, and large pots holding bushy herbs. The air was full of sweet scents. At the far end of the garden, a man was digging, perhaps preparing for a new planting. Despite everything, Stasia felt a smile spread across her face. "It's quiet here," Alexis said. "We won't be interrupted. Sit down a while. You'll have questions, I'm sure. Ask them, and I will try to answer." She saw then that the gardener was not the only other person there. By the door through which they had entered the garden, Pavel now stood keeping watch. This time, she suspected, it was not to prevent her from bolting, but to make sure nobody came in unless Alexis wanted them there. She sat. Flip was well occupied. Investigating every corner would take her some time. "I haven't been told anything about Lucas. I wanted to see him, perhaps to help, but the housekeeper said no. Is he all right? Are they looking after him? Alexis stretched out his legs. He too seemed to be enjoying the sun. I've seen your friend. He asked about you. I'm no expert, but I am confident he is being well looked after. They have him walking about a little, building his strength. Has the physician looked at his burns? I believe the physician was called away elsewhere on the day we arrived here. Certainly the dressings have been changed, and they give him draughts for the pain. A pause. At this point, that is all I can tell you. May I see him? I thought I might tell him stories. That would require the ruler's approval. Lucas is in the men's quarters, in an area reserved for folk who are unwell. Alexis gazed off across the lawn. Flip had found the gardener, who had set aside his spade and crouched down to pat the little dog. You'll have learned by now that this household has certain rules, including those that set out who may go where and speak with whom. Tedious at times, but required to maintain order in an establishment so large. Another lengthy pause. About the stories, I agree entirely. On the journey here, they gave the men heart. But this would not be my decision. You're saying I should ask the ruler? Alexis's mouth curved in a smile, but there was nothing happy about it. When a person has an audience with the ruler, it's the ruler who asks the questions. I will try to raise the subject. A shiver ran through Stasia. The old fears were creeping back in. Here in this place of green growth and sunshine, a place such as she would not have dreamed existed within the high walls of Dragon's Keep. And Irina, she needs help too. I do try, but she cries at night, and during the day she just sits staring at nothing. It's hard to get her to eat. At that farm where we stopped on the way, she seemed quite a lot better, but now, if I could bring her out here into the sun, perhaps. Alexis raised a hand, and she fell silent. I need to explain something to you before we see the ruler. What was it with him? One moment he seemed almost friendly. The next he was like a stranger, carefully distant. If this was some sort of game, it would help if she understood the rules. But then Dragon's Keep was a place of rules, and she had never much cared for those, even back at Hartwood. Birds and animals, plants and stones and water had their own way of being, with no need to set down the rules. They simply were. Say it then. Maybe that sounded rude, but never mind. Plain speaking was good. Perhaps he thought she was lacking in some way, a half-wit. She'd heard one or two of the women whisper names like that, looking at her sideways as they passed. We're going to speak with Lady Elisabetta as soon as we're called. Alexis had dropped his voice to a murmur, though the gardener was still too far away to hear. Pavel had not moved from his post near the doorway. There are accepted ways of doing these things, and I advise you to comply with them, no matter how you feel. The ruler is exactly that, the head of this household and the head of the Northlands. Nobody stands above her. He glanced over toward Pavel, then turned back to Stasia, his expression as grave as if he were about to announce a death. She knows about your amber owl. She has seen it. Stasia could not keep quiet. Seen it? So it's here? You brought it here? I thought it is here and safely locked away. Lady Elisabetta will ask you about it, where you found it, whether there is more amber in that place, where that amber might have originated. She will ask you about the trips you and Lucas made into the forest and how you traverse terrain other folk think impassable. She wants a way to the hermit. I know that. Bitterness rose in Stasia. Didn't she send the commander to find a way, even if it meant the deaths of ancient trees and creatures and the ruin of Hartwood settlement? Why would I tell her anything? Alexis did not answer this question. He waited, not meeting her eye now, then said, Something further? Word came to her, not from me, of what you did with the panicking horse. Some of my men spoke to folk from Hartwood. I gather there are rumours about your ability to do something similar with wild creatures. I don't know how much truth there is in those tales. Perhaps they belong with the stories of ghosts and uncanny folk that you sometimes tell. Lady Elisabetta asked me about the episode with the horse, and I'm almost certain she will want your account of it as well. Why would she do that? I am good at keeping animals calm. I help farmers quite often, but that has nothing to do with finding amber or making a way through the forest. It could do. Stasia felt a cold trickle down her spine. If anything was certain, it was that she would answer no questions about this particular matter. I strongly advise you to answer calmly, tell the truth, and remain as courteous as you can be. Speak only when spoken to. Keep your answers brief and to the point. I will be present all the time. You won't be left alone with Lady Elisabetta. A slight sound from the entry. When she looked up, another man stood in front of Pavel, a tall man in a guard's uniform, but all in black. Something in his expression chilled Stasia to the bone. He lifted a hand, and with the merest twitch of his long fingers, indicated to Alexis that they should come. It was time. Stasia found words. I thought, for a bit, I really thought that she would be kind, that it would be all right. When they gave us a bed and food and didn't lock us up, I thought, but it's not all right, is it? You say, tell the truth, but how can I tell the truth and be courteous? The truth is, her mission is destroying all I care about. Her voice rose. The truth is, folk have died and been hurt, and folk are going on suffering. The truth is, the forest is still being cut down. The commander is still doing his vile work in Hartwood. Stasia. They were both standing now, and Alexis put his hands on her shoulder. The touch startled her, and she flinched away. Stop, he said. And although he spoke in a murmur, something in his tone caught her attention. His eyes went to the man in black, then back to her. Breathe. You must heed my warning. Answer only the questions she asks. Do not stray to other matters. Keep your answers simple. Be polite. Stay calm. I will help where I can, but I too have rules to follow. Now we must go. 15. Stasia. The chamber was large, grand, shadowy. A long table dominated the space, and the ceiling was high. Stasia glanced up, wondering if bats or owls ever made their way in. There were many good roosting places. Alexis had made her leave Flip outside with Pavel, and she had not argued the point. He'd said, stay calm. Arguing with any instruction he gave her did not seem wise. Perhaps the ruler didn't like dogs in her audience chamber, or whatever this echoing place was. The black-clad guard had followed them in and now stood by the door, silent and watchful. It was easy to imagine him as a creature of dark intent, masquerading as a man. Even with her back to him, she could feel his gaze. At one end of the chamber there was a hearth, and on it burned a cheerful fire. Set close to this was an elaborately carved chair with red cushions embroidered in gold thread, and beside it stood a woman who could only be Lady Elisabetta. She was not dressed in fine silks or festooned with jewels, nor did she wear her hair in an elaborate style, as Stasia had imagined fine ladies might do. But her authority could be seen in every inch of her, from the upright carriage to the tilt of her chin, from the elegant plain lines of her dark plum-coloured gown to the sleek tidiness of her wheaten fair hair, braided up on top of her head with never a wisp astray. A small table by her side held a neat pile of documents. Perhaps she had been studying them. She must be able to read. In Hartwood, that skill was limited to the numbers and signs used by folk to aid in buying and selling stock or produce. There was a scribe in Vita's Hope who wrote letters for a small fee on the rare occasions that this was needed, but nobody closer to home could do so. This was another world. Apart from the grand chair, the only seating nearby was a bench of fine oak wood. She and Alexis stopped beside it, a good 6 paces from the ruler. Lady Elisabetta neither smiled nor gestured in welcome. Instead, she scrutinized Stasia from head to toe. Perhaps she should have gone back to the servants' quarters and changed into one of the gowns Lima had given her. Alexis bowed briefly. "My lady, this is Stasia from Hartwood Settlement," he said. She meant to curtsy. She copied Alexis's bow, feeling her face flush with the awkwardness of it. Why couldn't these folk just say, "Come in, sit down, how about a cup of tea before we get started?" Why couldn't they meet out of doors instead of using this forbidding chamber? It was such a lovely day out there, and if they wanted privacy, there was no shortage of guards to keep folk away. "So I see." The ruler's tone revealed nothing at all. "Be seated." Alexis motioned toward the bench. They both sat down. Although they were at arm's length apart, she could feel the tension in his body, and it surprised her. Wasn't this his home ground? Or was he just waiting for her to make some blunder, as she surely would? "I will be blunt with you, Stasia. As ruler, I deal with matters of great importance to the Northlands. I make decisions that will shape the future for generations of people. Now, I have some simple questions to put to you, and you are to answer honestly." Lady Elisabetta fixed Stasia with her gaze. The scrutiny made her belly churn. Should she say something? Alexis had said, "Answer only the questions she asks," and she had not asked a question yet. "I'll proceed then," said the ruler. Her tone was just a little chillier. Stasia wished she had Flip with her now. "I have seen your trinket. The quality is good, surprisingly good. Tell me where you found the raw material for it." Stasia glanced at Alexis, confused. "You mean the amber owl? I told that story in Hartwood, to the commander, when he took my owl from me. Alexis was there." "That's master, Alexis, to you," Lady Elisabetta said. "Show some respect. I was not present to hear this story from your own lips. I want it now." Stasia knew somehow that the tale of a nameless boy and girl on a walk through the great forest was not what this woman wanted. But it felt wrong to share such a precious memory without wrapping it in the protection of a story. "My friend and I found the amber beside a small lake in the forest, my lady. A place we call Clearwater." The words were good enough, she thought. A pity she couldn't keep her voice steady. "We brought it back, and my friend carved the owl. He's good with a knife." Another cold silence, as the ruler stared at her. "And?" she said. "That is all, my lady." Lady Elisabetta sighed. "I see I must guide you through this step by step, girl. The friend you speak of, that is the goatherd, the young man who travelled here with you? Lucas, yes. The friend you will not let me see, even though he's hurt and sad, even though I could help him, even though what happened to him was done under your orders." It was hard to hold back the words. "Have you and your friend found amber in that place before? Or elsewhere in Hartwood Forest?" That one was easy. "No, my lady. The scraps they sometimes discovered beside forest ponds, the ones that had caught up fragments of earth or stone or dead leaves before they hardened, were not what this woman meant by amber. It was not truly a lie." "How did you reach the lake you speak of? When I'm told, none of the local folk venture far into this forest. Is there a track nobody else knows of?" "There are no tracks, my lady. only those of bear and badger, wolf and hedgehog. A mission to take a party of men through the forest with carts and horses was... She sensed a warning from Alexis, though he did not so much as twitch an eyelid. It was always unlikely to succeed, for that reason. The terrain is steep in places. It's almost like climbing a cliff. The trees are tall, and they grow close. It can feel like night underneath, even when the sun is up. Another piercing stare from Lady Elisabetta. While your demeanour is somewhat unusual, young woman, I can see clearly that you are neither badger nor bear, wolf nor hedgehog. How did you and your friend reach this lake? Climbing, walking, staying watchful, looking for signs that animals had passed a certain way. It took a while to get there. How long? A day, there and back. A very long day. The memory of it was still clear. Setting out just after dawn, the hard climb, the twisting, tricky paths through the forest, the wondrous discovery of Clearwater, finding the amber, Lucas's laugh of sheer delight, a meal shared on the rocks by the water's edge, a long way back, reaching her cottage at dusk and bidding him farewell. It had not been until the next day that she'd learned how displeased his parents were about his lengthy absence in her company. Lady Elisabetta seemed to consider this for a while. "A day only," she murmured eventually. "Not so very far. Perhaps there are other lakes and waterways where amber might be found." As this was not a question, Stalsia remained silent. "Yes," the ruler's tone was sharp. "Hutwood Forest spreads over many hills and valleys, my lady. I know there are other streams. One of them runs down into our settlement and provides our water. About amber, I don't know. We did not search for it, we just found it." As if it had been waiting for us, she thought, but did not say. "Other folk in your village must know of this discovery of yours. Have others not attempted to find more? Amber of such quality could be sold for a high price, even in its natural state." Stasia struggled to put together a courteous answer. "The forest is a dangerous place. It's not only the animals that live there and the difficult terrain. There are many tales of danger higher up, old stories of malign spirits and other guardians."
"Guardians? What do you mean?"
"The stories, some of them, tell of uncanny beings. Different tales say different things about them. Nobody really knows. Nobody has travelled far enough to see them, if they are there." But she had seen something. Something she had not told Lucas in case it worried him. Under the trees, up by Clearwater, there had been signs. White stone set in a pattern. Knotted grasses. A posy of tiny wildflowers laid by the water's edge. Whether those signs had been for her, there was no knowing. Seeing them, she thought of Mother in the painting. The benign presence she had imagined sitting by that same lake, communing with her creatures.
"Foolish nonsense. Tales for children, to scare them out of wandering. Or tales told by old folk half out of their wits. I wonder that anyone gives them credence."
There seemed no point at all in explaining that since people had told the same tales, or variations of them, since the time of the oldest ancestors, there must surely be some wisdom in them. In a place like Hartwood, where the forest wrapped itself around the settlement and was part of everyone's life, it would be foolish indeed to disregard those tales. Somewhere, deep down, they must hold truth. "In the old stories," Stasia said, "never once does a person reach the hermit and come safely home again. They vanish, or they're found dead, or they go out of their wits." She did not mention the tales in which a person came home to find that 100 years had passed and their loved ones were all gone.
"Are there any other ways into the forest?" the lady asked.
Had she not heard what Stasia had said?
"Ways that you and your friend have taken, starting from your village. Hard paths, easy paths, any path a strong man could walk or climb or thread a way through? I cannot believe